I think it'll switch off. Welcome to the Tin Biscuit Podcast. Today we've got a new guest, and that is...
Oh, hi, I'm Becky Barnes. I'm a plus-size blogger, writer, general nuisance on the internet.
A plus-size blogger, and you're also a plus-size model, as I'm like, well, aren't you?
I am, yeah. It always makes me chuckle that, because I'm 40 years old now as well, so it's, I feel a bit past my time. But yeah, I do
don't
have
say
a
that.
I'm taken, and
don't
I get
say,
for it.
Don't say past that, because I'm Mike, I'm 41. So, did you say you get paid for being a blogger and a plus-size model?
Yeah, I get so, and it's not my main stream of income, as people put it nowadays. It's not, I haven't like monetized it big style, but no, I'm lucky enough to get paid to write articles and things like that, and I get paid for the modeling work as well.
Oh, that's pretty cool then, isn't it? So tell us a bit about plus size like model, and also body positivity, because that's one of the reasons we've got you on, and also we're going to talk a bit about mental health, so it all sort of ties in.
Yeah, but... it does, especially for me. Yeah, it definitely ties in. It's a bit of a long story, so bear with me. So I've always been a big girl. From being a little girl, I was a chubby little thing. Teenager, I was always a bit bigger than my friends, and I was very aware of that as well. I think there was a lot of, when I was a kid, there was a lot of fitness people about. I've got to throw show me age now, but there was like Lizzie on ITV and stuff like that, and it was like, ugh. Yeah, so I was always really aware of that and really very conscious of it. But I'm a bit of a juxtaposition, really. I'm a bit of a contradiction, because although I was always incredibly aware of it and I was always incredibly active in trying to not be fat, I was always on a diet, always doing something, I was always confident as well. I was always a confident person. So I think I was confident in my kind of personality and things like that. But there was always this horrible niggling thing in the back of my mind. You're fat, you're fat, you need to lose weight. You need to be skinny like everyone else. You need to fit in, basically, was the big thing. And it wasn't just me. It was outside sources. It was my parents saying, oh, you'll never get a boyfriend if you're fat, or you'll never get a decent job if you're fat, and all this kind of thing. And that's because they were just themselves.
Yeah.
I think they kind of, from experience as well, kind of, they'd lived it as well, and with the best possible kind of will and love in the world, they didn't want me to live the life they'd lived. But all that did was kind of crush my confidence in my abilities and in my sense of self. And yeah, I spent right up until my early 30s desperately trying to do everything within my power to lose weight, and it was the main focus of my life. It everything I ever did, it was never fully enjoyed and never fully embraced, because in the back of my mind I was thinking, I should be skinny, that'll make everything better. And then imagine that was having a detrimental effect on my mental health as well, because I couldn't think of anything else. And even when I became a mum at 30, it was still in my mind, I've got to lose weight, I can't be a good mum if I'm fat, I can't run around after my kid. I mean, I could, and I can, and I still do to this day, but in my mind, that was what I've been told. So,
yeah.
But then, when Pops was one and I was 31, that's when I discovered plus-size blogging. I mean, I'd never even heard of a blog, I didn't know what it was, I'd missed that whole kind of live journal and all that kind of thing on the internet. I'd barely get into grips with Twitter and Facebook, to be honest, which is ironic because that's my career now. I'm a social media manager and writer and things. But at the time, I was like, oh, there's all these girls and they look like me and they're all loving fashion and just not caring about anything. And I thought, I want to go with that. I really want to go. And I think for me, when you become a mum as well, you lose a bit of your identity. And it was just a little corner of the internet where I could still be Becky. I want just Poppy's mum. I could be Becky and I could try out different fashions, put pictures up and chat to like-minded people about it. And it was a huge light bulb moment for me of that I'd been wasting all my life worrying about looking a certain way, when in fact I could embrace how I looked, enjoy how I looked, and actually in the end make a living out of how I looked. So yeah, it was a huge thing discovering plus size blog for me.
Do you ever worry about the health implications of being bigger in later life? I mean, I do realize you do get the bigger person and they are fit, because I've seen it in like the gym, and like I would say I'm quite fit. I bike 12 miles a day. I did do a diet. I did the carnivore diet, which was just eating meat products for a month. So I had fried bacon, fried eggs, everything in butter, everything in lard. And I lost like a stone and a half on it. That was back in January, and I did it again about 2 weeks ago, and I lost 7 pounds on it. But because I like food too much, it's not really the diet for me, because it's really hard. Diets are hard, and it's more...
They are, and I mean, I'm through the years, in the last 10 years since I discovered plus size blogging and fat kind of politics and things like that, I have come to my personal conclusion is that the diet industry is a multi-billion dollar industry for a reason. It's because it trades on failure. It trades on insecurities, and it gets people in. But the minute you go back to any sort of normality or anything like that, you are probably bound to put the weight back on again. There's been lots of kind of scientific research into how maintainable it actually is, and it's not. So I think the best thing for me personally, and I can't ever, everyone should have autonomy over their own bodies. I'm not telling everyone to be fat and happy. That's not my job to do that. But for me personally, I've left that whole kind of diet industry behind.
Yeah.
I know that I'm fit and active. I get out and about. I cook everything from scratch. I enjoy a good home-cooked meal. And that's the best I can do for me and my family. And that leaves me the space to have a good mental headspace as well and not worry about all those kind of the pressure of the diet kind of culture.
Yeah, because diets are more of a lifestyle change other than just like a quick fix. I mean, I've had a few people on my podcast. I've had Sean Baker, and I've had a guy called Brett. Brett's done a really good transformation because he's like in America, and he was going to be put on electric shock therapy for his depression and that. But all he eats now is like minced steak and bacon, and he drinks water.
Yeah.
And like the change is, and he's been doing it for like over 3 years now, but there's people been doing the carnivore diet for more than 20 years, but that diet's not for like sort of like everyone.
No.
You do need something where you can be happy doing it, especially if you do like food, because it is hard just going. And like, I look forward to food. I look forward to breakfast. Yeah. And bacon and egg is nice, but every day is a bit of a trial. And then you can mix up with omelettes, then meatloaf and things like that. But yeah, diets, it's more of a lifestyle change. But going back to the fitness side of it and like the health side, do you ever worry about later health impacts on sort of your body being that bigger? Or
no, and people might call me irresponsible or whatever, and to be quite honest, they can just get lost. But I just think everyone should live their lives how they want to live them, and I'm quite aware of the possible impacts, but like I say, I keep myself as healthy as I can, and to be quite honest as well, you don't owe anyone your health. You could end up with a health problem related to any kind of thing in your life, and maybe something out of your control, and you don't owe someone your health, you don't owe society to be well. You should just focus on yourself and try and keep yourself as well as you can. I think the best thing you can do for yourself.
What sort of exercise do you do to keep yourself fit and active? Because like walking, jogging, running, any weights, the gym.
I've never been able to get my driving license, so I tend to walk everywhere anyway. I do like the gym when they're open. So just before lockdown, we got a back pass for the gym, and the girls were going to the junior gym, and my partner and I were going to the gym, and I was absolutely loving it. It's very good. I do definitely believe in the power of exercise and mental health. And I think that's the difference for me. It's that shift in focus. When I used to go to the gym when I was 20, 25, I would pound that treadmill and say the names of everyone who'd ever called me a fat cow and all this. And it was my revenge. I was going to get skinny to show them. I wasn't showing anyone anything, was I? It was just...
You was doing it more for them than for yourself then.
If you want to move your body, you should move your body because you love it, because you know the power of your body. My body birthed a baby. My body gets me around every day. My body earns me money as a model, and I've now learnt to respect that and accept it. It's not even body positivity, it's body neutrality. It's the fact that it's a body. It's one of the many facets that make up who I am. I'm funny, I'm kind, I'm intelligent, I'm a mum, I'm a partner, I'm a great cook, all these kind of things. I'm not.
That's a good thing to say, I'm a great cook.
I'm a great one. I'm not just the sum of my body. So when I move my body, I move it because I respect it, because I want to move it, because I want to clear my head. I want to get some time to myself. That's why I move my body. And I think if everyone could do that, they'd probably find a bit more joy in the gym or exercise and things like that.
It's like interesting you say fitness and mental health, because I go for a 12-mile bike ride. I go before breakfast, which is like fasting cardio. Is it called fasting cardio? With like before you go, and then I have breakfast after my shine that. But I certainly feel better. My anxiety hits me, like, we'll get to mental health in a bit, but my anxiety hits me first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Not so much now, but it did. I mean, I've like still got it. But once I come back off from that bike ride, because it just takes me under an hour, I like feel so yeah. much better.
Like it started your day. It's
yeah.
Started
and it
day.
Just sorts my head out.
Yeah.
And like I feel a bit more better. I mean, I've the 23rd of March was my birthday, and that's when Boris gave me the birthday present of lockdown. And then that's where I came off my meds for my depression and my anxiety. And it's been hard. These last couple of weeks have been really hard. But I've kept that fitness up to try and keep it away, because you've got all your endorphins going. And like I would say, fitness is one of the best things for mental health.
Yeah.
How's your mental health? Because through this lockdown and through the lockdown, because I'm guessing it didn't help, and especially where we live, because we've got the beach one side and we've got the wall to the next. Mm-hmm. I think living where we're so lucky to be where we was, I know people moan about it,
yeah,
but I think if I was in a city or a back ass village or somewhere, yeah, I don't think I could have coped, especially if I was in a flat with no garden.
Yeah.
And like walking one
my garden's been a big thing for me, just taking 5 minutes outside, sitting on the chair, breathing in the fresh air, listening to the birds. And it may sound really hippy dippy and stuff like that, but yeah, that's been a big thing for me. I mean, I've not really gone out much, because I work from home anyway, so I'm kind of in the house a lot. And like I say, I don't drive, my partner does. But yeah, it's lockdown's been interesting to say the very least. It's been incredibly challenging for my mental health. So I've got a long, very wibbly wobbly history with mental health since my teens, to be quite honest.
And same here, yeah.
Yeah, it linear. You have moments where you're up, you're down, you feel like you're managing it great, and then wham, something can really inconsequential can happen and just hit you again. So yeah, lockdown's been challenging. This last week I've definitely felt the madness of lockdown. And we moved into a new house 3 weeks ago, my partner's gone back to work, I'm trying to work full-time at home while homeschooling two 10-year-old girls, and that I think even without a long-term mental health problem would have an effect on anyone's mental health, to
yeah,
be quite, because it's challenging and it's frustrating, and you're gonna get stuff wrong, and you're gonna be hard on yourself, because that's what we do as humans. We're so hard on ourselves. We're like, oh my god, why are you such a failure? Why are you not performing in this way? Why are you not doing this? Why, again, back to the body thing, why are you so fat? Why are you, you're always so hard on yourself? And I've tried in the last kind of probably 5 years to be a bit kinder to myself and say, you know what, I'm gonna mess up, I'm not always gonna get stuff right, and the most important thing from that is how you then move on from it. It's acknowledging the mistake or the failure or the wobble or whatever it is, and then saying, okay, that's fine, I'm human, but then how do I move on from that? Am I going to spend the next 2 weeks berating myself over it and going, you're so rubbish? Or am I actually going to go, okay, it's fine, tomorrow's a new day, let's see how we tackle that day. And the biggest thing I can say to people about maintaining mental health or managing it is to acknowledge it and then move on from it and say, okay, new day, what we're going to do today, how are we going to try and elevate my mood? And like you say, it could be getting on a bike, it could be, for a lady, it could be painting your nails, it could be having a bath, it's something. Do something for yourself, acknowledge it, do something for yourself, and keep moving forward, because that's all you can do. You've just got to keep plugging on.
Do you think there's a big thing where people do things for other people or are too worried? If they do something, they'll think, well, someone else might think I'm stupid, someone else might not like it, and people don't do enough for themselves, and they're scared of having the piss taken out of them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think...
And, like, that holds people back.
Yeah, the whole pressure of the outside world, and again, I'm a huge advocate for social media. Social media has been a life-changing thing for me in such a positive way, but I know for a lot of people, it can be a negative thing, because they are worried about keeping up appearances, keeping up with the Joneses. It's almost heightened that even more, because before it used to be what your neighbour was doing, now it's what 20,000 people on the internet are doing. And it's like, you do feel that pressure to, yeah, keep up with people, or worry about what they're going to think of you, or what they're going to say about you, and things like that. And that's something that you have to try and overcome as well.
Social media, in my view, is sometimes the scourge of humanity, along with technology, because I don't think it plays a good role at times, because like, everyone's addicted to it, and as I keep saying, and people who know me, I am the worst for it. Even when I'm on podcasts, I'll tap my phone and see what's happening. I'm so addicted, and like, I know I'm just living in this ether and living my life through other people. Even that, I'm just scrolling to see. But I do think, on the flip side of that coin, I do think it's played a major part in this lockdown. Mm-hmm. And I think if we didn't have it, I think people would have struggled. But yeah. I mean, we're pretty much the same age. I was 41 this year, so I came from the time as if I wanted to speak to my girlfriend or a mate, I had to get 10p or a phone card and go. And then they put it up to 20p. And then they brought in the like mobile. Yeah, and then I can't really read a book as good as I could before this technology, because I'm always checking my phone.
Yeah.
And I do think technology takes people out of living in the real world. Yeah. But then again, it's helped you, and it's helping so many people with other problems, mental depression, mental illness, anxiety, and also body issues, because it's not just plus size models, you've got the really skinny models. And I had a girl on with a anorexia. So I can see it from both ways. But yeah, I mean, social media must have helped you. Do like you get to many people getting in touch saying help, basically? I'm like sort of in a bit of a pickle.
Yeah, I mean, it's again back to that thing about where we live. It's not the most culturally diverse town in the world. It's a very white town. It's a very quite sheltered little place at the end of the motorway. And before social media, all I knew was my little bubble around me. Don't get me wrong, I'd lived in London, I'd lived in the West Midlands, all that kind of thing, but I always ended up coming back home again. And although I love living here, it is home, it's my people. People here are a laugh, they're kind, they're fun. It's just a great place to be, and I say to people, it's much of a muchness. It's like any other northern town. It's got everything you need, and the people are funny, and what more could you ask for?
It's got the best fish and chips in the world.
It has got the best, and the houses are cheap and all that kind of thing. And yeah, but if you do live here and you haven't experienced outside of here, social media opened me up to a whole world of different people, and a whole world of different opinions and viewpoints and political viewpoints and personal viewpoints. Like I say, it changed my perception of myself. Without social media, I think I still would probably be going to Slimming World or Weight Watchers or all that kind of thing, because all I know is what's around me. And I still see a lot of my friends who are, to me, absolutely tiny. They're like a size 10 and 12 saying, back on a diet, got to fit into my holiday clothes. And I'm like, what a way to live. It's like, yeah, it feels like a hamster wheel.
Yeah. Do you think groups like Slimming World and Weight Watchers sort of exploit people?
I do.
In like a sort of way?
Yeah, I think they do. They're quite clearly there to make money. Frankly, if you go off plan, you're probably going to put the weight back on again. And they kind of trade on your vulnerabilities and kind of sell a whole new life to you. Because if you lose weight, your life's going to be so much better. And it's not true. Your life will be amazing at any size, at any time, with grey hair, without grey hair, with whatever, whoever you are. your life is important right now and you need to live in the moment right now. Don't say, I'll go swimming when I've lost 2 stone. Go swimming now. Enjoy it. Yeah. Wobbly bits out. It doesn't matter.
I get like, sort of going back to being happy, I like remember I was watching a Jordan Peterson seminar talk, and like he said, because like I've never been a massive advocate of like tablets, I've always wanted to try and do it naturally, but like he said, you like sort of could, if and like you're depressed, try and work out what's like making you depressed and get that away from like your life. Then give the other example of is people might have a fantastic job, all the money in the world, perfect family, but you're not happy in yourself, and that's where tablets will work.
Yeah.
So before you go on to, I mean, I'm no professional, so don't take my advice. I'm the last person anyone needs to take advice from about mental health. But EM says try and analyze your life. Maybe write down a list and see what it is that's making you feel crap, and then take that away and then see how you are. Mm-hmm. Like if it's a crap job, look for a new job. And it comes back to something, I don't think there's much self-responsibility nowadays. I think a lot of people want to blame something else, someone else, or, well, if the government did this, I'd be like this if I did this. But then if the government did that, there'd be another problem. And they'd say, but if, I mean, I've been crap with money. Mm-hmm. And I can't blame the banks, I can't blame anyone else, I've got to blame myself for the position I'm in.
Yeah.
And once you start doing that, it's hard to look at yourself like that, because you do think, well, am I a fuck up? And then you think about it and go, well, no, I've got it quite good compared to other places.
Yeah.
And we're quite lucky to be born into this cultural system as like we are now.
Yeah.
But I don't think many people take enough self-responsibility. I think they're too busy to pass the buck or pass the blame.
I think there's an argument for both sides, and I think systematically a lot of us are at a disadvantage. I think for me, the huge thing for me at the moment is wealth distribution. I do feel there is far too much power and far too much wealth at the top, and that is oppressive to working class people. I do feel that, but I do feel, like you say, you also have to take responsibility for yourself, and there are areas of my finances and things like that I could do a whole lot better on, and I wholly admit my spending, especially on clothes, is obscene. But if I didn't spend that much money, would I have been able to afford to buy a house? No, probably not, because of the kind of position I was in, the way I was brought up, my way, I didn't get the bank of mum and dad loan and things like that. And once you're in that system, once I started renting at 18, I'd pretty much put the kibosh on my chances of ever buying, because I was paying someone else's mortgage at an inflated rate that didn't allow me to save, that then just, I ended up in, again, that hamster wheel thing of this vicious cycle of being stuck in the kind of renters market. So I think there's an argument for both sides. And I think, yes, take responsibility for yourself and look at those elements in your life and say, well, this happened to me when I was X age, and this happened to me when, and yes, these things did happen, but if you hold on to them, it's going to have a detrimental effect on your future. So there's things you do have to learn to let go of and stop being so angry about everything and the world. But I am still a bit angry at rich people, so.
Well, the thing is with that, I mean, I like understand both arguments, but if we went into a complete, and like, I don't want to get in to this at all, but if we went into like a social, like sort of like a socialist system, there'd be no strive for like people, and then people would think, well, I ain't got to do anything because it's already there. Where us as humans, we need that human interaction. That's another thing about what depressed me about the lockdown, not seeing anyone, not be able to kiss or hug people.
Yeah,
you do need human interaction. It's all right speaking to someone like we're doing or this and that, but you still need that human face facing.
Like
we do need strive to like sort of keep our minds going better.
Yeah,
and like definitely. And like as and like you said, there is people that take advantage of the system and are just pure and utter evil, but that's probably because most rich people you find are psychopaths, and that's where they are. Because I mean sort of being a psychopath isn't someone going around killing someone, it's just someone who ain't got no emotion, and then like you will find most business owners.
The thing is, I think we're taught if you work really, really hard, you'll end up like these millionaires. But actually the reality of the fact of the matter is a lot of them came from wealth anyway, and they were already very rich. And there's very few actual self-made millionaires. You'll find out they would have had a handout at some point or a leg up from someone or something, and were kind of taught that, oh, if you strive really hard and work really, really hard, you will get what you want. And the reality of the matter is that doesn't always work. I've worked damned hard all my life. And no, I'm not a millionaire. Yes, I'm okay. I've got a roof over my head. I've got a lovely daughter. I've got a lovely partner. I've got a lovely stepdaughter. But yeah, you do kind of, if you've always been working class and you've always kind of been in that situation, you do kind of sit back and look and go, wow, that would be really nice, wouldn't it? That would be great. And it's, you shouldn't be so, again, you shouldn't be so hard on yourself. I haven't failed just because I'm not.
Oh yeah, no, definitely.
Rich or things like that. I you should recognise the hard work that you've put in, and even just to survive sometimes, because the world can be an incredibly cruel place. And yeah, so again, it's about being kind to yourself and saying, you know what, yeah,
you shouldn't. Yeah, going back to the rich, and like this ties in with mental health, you shouldn't always be putting yourself down. Like, sort of, if like you've got, say, I mean, I've got a cheap small car, and if I pass someone who I passed yesterday, I'm like, they had a big Bentley car and like they didn't look old enough to have it and like, but you don't know their situation, and yeah, it's like, well, like, you know, you don't want to drive past them and go, it's like that, which, yeah, sort of you do.
It's human nature to be envious. It's human nature to want more. And like you say, that is that's still, then it, again, it's what you do with that emotion. Like I said about the mental health, what do you do with that emotion then? Yes, I'm envious. Acknowledge it and then go, right, I'm going to do a few more hours overtime this week at work, or I'm going to pitch a few more ideas to an editor and get a few more articles so I can then get that car, because it's what you do with that emotion. Or you can go home and just be really sad and go, oh, well, I ain't got a Bentley, so that's rubbish. So,
yeah,
it's what you do with those emotions, isn't it? It's how you turn around.
You like can be kicking stones with your fat lip out, and then before you know it, you're like 70 and you're ready to die.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a good book called The Chimp Paradox. I don't know if you've heard of it. I think it's by Professor Steve Peters. Mm. Is it Steve Peters? I'm not going to go on my phone and check. I'm probably wrong. I'm sure people will correct me. But that is so good. And the guy who wrote the book actually narrates it, so it comes over as it's meant to sound. Yeah. And it's very, and if you miss something, you can go back, and he uses analogies. Mm. And it's all about your brain split up into certain paces. And if you get angry, everything's processed through your chimp first, yeah, before your human part and your computer. Hence the saying, just sleep on it.
Because
if something happens, people make a rash decision, you should give it about an hour. They say give it about an hour, think, and then reason.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer in that, because I think especially if you suffer from mental health problems as well, you can let your emotions run away with you and your reactions run away with you, because it's not that you lack control, but you are a very emotionally driven person, and it is human nature, yes, to dive into something feet first and go, whoa, or be really you do. It's, but again, I think for me the big thing is, like you say, give it an hour. If you haven't given it an hour and you did jump in, then how do you move on from that? How do you turn that into something a bit more positive? And I'm the first person to say sorry if I've messed up. I'm the first person to acknowledge my cock-ups in life. I go, yeah, you know what, I did say that, and I said it rashly, and I shouldn't have said it, but it's out there now, so I apologize, and how can we move forward from this? And I think, yeah, it'd be nice to give everything an hour, wouldn't it? but as humans, we're not necessarily wired like that. So
sorry is an hard word to say, and admitting your faults and being wrong, and that's another one of the exercises in, and like the book, and like it says, get people to write down your bad points and good points on a list. And I'm like, he did say it's going to be hard to read, but you need to know. And I'm like, well, I already know my bad. I don't do it, but it's so good, because it just makes you think, saying, well, it's like, not me, everyone thinks like this.
Yeah.
This is part of it. And like, one of the things I learned, and I'm still trying to get my head around, is I think that everyone thinks like me. So if someone says, I'll be there at 10, I expect them to be there at 10.
Yeah.
And then it goes into detail, well, there could be a traffic jam. But because your chimp jumps to the conclusion saying, well, where the fuck have you been? I've been waiting here 10, you're like 10 minutes late. I've wasted all my time. And that's part of it. And it's like, you just need to take time to like step back.
Yeah, for sure. It's a big thing that I've kind of drummed into my little girl, and I was talking to my partner's little girl about it the other day, because she was really upset that some of the kids at school who weren't doing so well were taken on a trip to like a museum or somewhere. And she was like, well, it's not fair because they weren't doing very well at school anyway. So why did they get to go on the trip and we didn't? Because she's an incredibly intelligent little girl. And I said, but what you have to think about, I said, is put yourself in their shoes. I said, what the teachers are possibly trying to do is encourage those ones who aren't doing as well to actually be more engaged in school and try a little bit harder, because they know that if they try harder, they're going to get rewarded and things like that. I said, and also you don't know about their personal circumstances. You don't know what their home life is like. For every person's failing or every person's kind of mishap in life, there's probably a reason behind it. It's like when my little girl Pop says to me, oh, so-and-so was really mean to me, I was like, think about why they're being mean to you. I can guarantee you it's probably because someone's been mean to them, and they're passing that negative energy on to you because they're unhappy, they're not feeling their very best. We all know when we're hurt, it's our human nature to lash out, to hurt someone else, because that's what we do. I said, so if someone has been mean to you, or if someone's not doing so well at school, consider why, and maybe be a bit kinder to them as well, and just think, you know what, maybe they're having a bit of a tough time and that kind of thing.
What's your tips on like mental health, and have you experienced any bullying at the age you are now for being a plus size model? Do like you get any likes of derogatory comments from people saying not very nice things? Because there was an actress or a dancer, and she was on, was it a Miley Cyrus video, and she was on with Piers Morgan. Okay. And Piers Morgan, I don't know if you saw that one, and Piers Morgan was having a go at her saying, why are you so fat? And like, you're advertising this saying it's, and it's good. And it's like, no one says anything about plus size models when like they're in dance videos, this, that, and like the other. Do you still experience bullying now? And how do you combat that? Tips with mental health.
I've actually been incredibly lucky. I've been doing this for nearly 10 years now, and within that 10 years I can probably count on my fingers and toes the amount of times I've got a bit of abuse. And it's been your usual stuff: get on a treadmill, fatty, lose some weight, stop eating cake, blah blah blah. Fair enough. I've got friends and colleagues, shall I call them, other people who are in the same kind of thing that I do, and they have suffered the most horrendous abuse. Kill yourself, you fat bitch, all that kind of, they've had just the most horrendous, and I don't know how they would cope with that. For me personally, I've always had a blanket delete and block policy. If someone says something to me, if they're rude about my size, if they say inevitable dick pics you get in your inbox, all that kind of thing, for me personally, and everyone will handle this differently, for me personally, it is always delete and block. I'm not interacting with them. I'm not even giving them airspace. I'm done.
Just don't engage.
Yeah. For me, it's, I have to preserve my emotional and mental energy, and spend it on the things that matter to me, like my family, like my job. Yeah. So if I give them some of my mental and emotional energy, I feel I've done other people in my life a disservice. So that's just me personally. But there's other girls who are incredible, and they fight against these people, and they have full-on arguments with them. And they will, if they get a dick pic, they'll send it to the bloke's girlfriend and say, do you know your dirty, rotten boyfriend doing this and all this kind of thing? And I'm like, whoa. I just have not got the time or energy for that person.
Too much drama.
Yeah, but if you want to fight that, and if you want to make a stand for that, you do you, because that's amazing. But yeah, for me personally, and the same with when I got bullied when I was a kid. And my mum always used to, I guess it's my mum and dad, they used to say, just ignore them, just walk away. Don't give them anything back. Don't give them reason to then keep coming back at you. So I have always just kind of walked away and gone, fine, if you want to be like that, be like that, but that's no reflection on me as a person, so ta-da.
It's very mentally draining to like do that, and then when you realize what's been going on, you realize you've lost maybe 2 weeks, a week, a month of like your life.
Yeah, and that's
talking to someone it. That's not like they'll never agree. The thing with stuff what's going on now, trans, BLM, people are just not going to agree because people, again, going back to that book, will not think the same as you because our brains aren't wired like that. We're all different and we're all have our own opinions. And I'm sometimes in the mind of like, oh, does it even fucking matter anymore? Just get on with your lives.
And see, a lot of stuff matters to me and I try and be vocal about stuff that matters to me and I try and be an ally to my black friends. I try and be an ally to my gay friends and things like that. And I try, because I have got a platform, because I've got, I mean, I'm a tiny, tiny, tiny little fish in a huge ocean of social media people, but it's still 14,000 people who might listen to what I've got to say. So if I can raise up one of my friends who doesn't have a voice or I can support them in some way, I will do that. But like you say, I think when it comes to engaging in what isn't even debate, it's not even a healthy debate anymore. Yeah,
cut it off.
When you cut it off and shut it down.
I mean, like, I've had people on my podcast that people won't agree with, definitely not agree with. Like, give you an example, I've had Paul Golding on from Britain First. And then I've had two trans people on. I've had the trans lady on from Hull, Melissa Reed, who won the £1 million lottery. But it turned out she sold her soul to the devil, and then she won it, and then she died. But she openly admits she, like, did that. But I've had Melanie on, then I've had Martin Vickers on. Paddy from Emmerdale. So I've had Thomas Turgis. So I've had a wide variety of people from porn stars to political leaders. And I do believe everyone should have their say so people can hear it from the horse's mouth. Because like people like to, especially the media, they're just the worst for it. They're just the worst for manipulating, reporting what they want to report.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's another reason why I've gone for the unedited thing. Because I've seen how the media work and how the clip and splice things from one part of the conversation to the next one.
Yeah.
And like I've had people, someone I think's coming on next week and she said, I don't want to have it recorded because I don't want it edited. So can we stream it live?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, right. Okay then. But I try to give people platforms and like I do reach out to other side. One person said, well, have you asked other sides of the like sort of people? And I've got in contact with the new Black Panther movement, which is a split off from the Black Panther movement, but that's not what this is at. So I do try and give everyone a massive
scope. I think that's like you say, the beauty and the curse of social media. It does give people a voice and it does give people a platform, right or wrong.
Someone said, well, why did you give Paul Golding a platform? And I'm like, because he deserves a platform. Like, everyone needs a platform, like, regardless. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, if people want to come on, they can come on. But it's like you say, some like times people are just assholes and nasty, that's not in conversation. And people say, "Well, free speech," and I'm like, "But that's not free speech, is it?"
Free speech goes so far when you're purposefully promoting hate or going against something that. It's when we were kids, people saw being gay as a choice or something that, you would choose to do and it was wrong and this kind of thing. The fact of the matter is, you're born it and that's it, end of story. So anyone who has a problem with that, I don't think deserves a platform. I think they need to shut up and go away.
I don't think the media's helped the gay community, and even gay people and trans people have said people flying these flags for us isn't helping us, we don't really want it. And like I've heard that from many people, and I've had two trans people on sort of my podcast, and they were both in the mindset as people are allowed their own opinion, if and like they say we're not, and that's fine.
Performative as well. I think people can be like, oh yeah, I support this and I support that, but are they actually following it through in real life? Are they having challenging conversations with bigoted members of their family or in the workplace? Are they saying to the workplace, what are your employment policies? Are you following it through in real life, or are you doing it for social media effects? If you're flying a flag somewhere, but you're not actually actively supporting a gay person or a trans person, then are you actually really doing anything?
Well, that's virtual signalling, isn't it? And I did a comment on to someone because I just said a comment and like I just said that's pure and out virtual signal, and he come back to me and said, well, why is it? And I said, come on my podcast and like we'll talk about it, and like he did. And like many people have said no, but many people have said actually, yeah. Then his name's Jeff. He's a trained, what is he? He's not a physicist. He's not a psychiatrist. He's a bit like a counsellor, and he's done a book called The 12-Step Program Without God. Yeah. And we just had a good conversation.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's needed. I do think we need conversation.
Yeah,
definitely.
Sure.
Because both sides are as bad as each other. It's just tit for tat and it's boring.
Yeah.
And again, that's why you need conversation. But the two trans I had and were fine with saying people allowed their own opinion. Melissa Reed said that she used to get, before she passed away, she said people used to shout in Hull, get your cock out like that. And like, sort of, they said, well, we've got a dildo in our bag and we just pull it out and wave it to them. like that. So
that knowledge and that thing in it, and then how you deal with it. I remember I was living in Beverley, just outside Hull at the time, and I was walking down the street and some lad cycled past and went, Jesus, your ass is massive. And I turned around and went, I know, it's fucking glorious, isn't it? Like, and he just kind of, you could see him think, oh shit, and just kept riding. And I guess it is what you do with it, how you turn that around. It doesn't, the thing is, it doesn't make it any better. It doesn't make it any better that people are shouting at you down the street. It's a shit thing to experience. It's a horrible thing to experience. But I guess when you're feeling confident enough to tackle it, that's when things change, isn't it? That's when, like, say, it's opening up that conversation, isn't it?
We're the same age. So, like, we've grown up in the 80s with the primary school. Then I went to a school, I actually went to Wintringham, so that was in the 90s.
Yeah.
But do you think it's got a bit softer? Because I think we grew up in a bit of a harder time than like we do now, because it's all about the naughty step. You can't use the word bad, you can't shout at people. Like if I talked in English or I misbehave, I got a bit of chalk chucked at my head.
Yeah.
Or like even the chalk rubber, or even a slap around the back.
Yeah, for sure. I went to Western, so...
Ooh.
One of the roughest schools in town.
Well, I was
slap banging three council estates. It was harsh. Yeah, we had a teacher who would lob the board rubber at your head. My form tutor got someone up against the door with his arm across his neck. And that's what happened in school. If you misbehaved, you was out. End of story. And I don't know. I don't know if it is... Again, it's about striking a balance. My little girl's school is very kind of holistic. They don't do lessons, they do projects, and they integrate the education into the project as a whole. So they don't sit down and go, right, this hour is maths. What they do is if they're talking about, they did a project on exploration, like mountain exploration, all that kind of thing. When they did maths, they did it as map coordinates.
How cool.
They were still doing maths, but it was kind of integrated into what they were talking about at the time. And they got
like a real life situation.
Yeah, they got an explorer to come in and give a talk about when he went to Antarctica or wherever and all this kind of thing. And it's more integrated. And I think as the world itself can become quite, there's a lot going on at the moment. It's a very kind of tumultuous kind of world at the moment, and with the pressures of social media and all that kind of thing, I think if schools are taking a little bit of a softer approach, I don't mind that so much. I think, again, it's that mental health thing, isn't it? It's taking care of the brain first before you get down to the work, the business of the situation. So if schools are taking care of the children's emotions and brains first and then saying, let's do some education as well whilst we're here, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing personally, because there was no support for me mentally at school. If I had a...
No, 90s, nothing. Get out.
Yeah, literally no one cared. I mean, I think I did a dramatic 10 paracetamol overdose when I was at school, and all I got was a hug from a teacher, and you went, there, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they'd be like, social services. There was nothing. I mean, I went through some horrific times at school, some quite really, really horrible stuff at school. There was not a lot of support.
Do you think that's helped you, though, being the way you are now and how, like, you look at things? Because, like, there is a train of thought that being so soft doesn't help people when they get into the real world, because if someone says something to them, their whole thought system collapses and goes, hey... Well, I've never experienced that, because I experienced bullying, you know, for being fat. People said I had a microphone head. People, because I've got a little spot under there, and Mole, I was called Molly and that. But that sort of set me up to, like, where I'm quite hard. I'm like, I couldn't care. But with people not like that, being, again, in this softer system,
yeah,
when people go out into the real world, especially if you go into a factory, it's a different world in a factory.
Yeah, yeah. I've worked in many
factories. Women are the worst in factories, I tell you that. But if like, you had something said to you and you weren't used to it, it might sort of collapse your mental system. But do you think a bit of bullying at school, or before you hit the adult world, before you hit the adult world, do you think it's any good?
I think the thing is, I think you're never going to avoid bullying, no matter how protective schools are and things like that. It's still going to happen, end of story. But I personally feel that the way schools are dealing with it now a bit better, and the way in society as a whole we're talking more openly about mental health and things like that, I actually think that would, that prepares you more for it.
I'm not saying bullying's good.
No,
don't, like, so get me wrong, but I'm like, I am saying that's not how the real world works.
It's not and how like, the world works.
Like, I've always had a stutter.
I say the world is a cruel place, and there are going to be times when you're not going to be able to afford something. There are going to be times when someone's going to be cruel to you. There's going to be times when you're going to get your heart broken.
Yeah.
Those things all still happen and will always happen. But I think, and I hope, that in the world that we're living in now, there's more support for when those things do happen. Because, yes, those things happened to me, and it took me a long, long time to unpick them and recover from them. And I just think if the support's there earlier, maybe they won't have that kind of years of mental torment and unpick it all themselves and make sense of it all themselves and go, oh God, Jesus, am I a better person now? Am I tougher? All that kind of thing. Maybe if they've got the support right there and then to process it at the time when it happens.
Yeah.
You store a lot of stuff up. And you
oh, definitely.
You feel the weight, the burden of these experiences that you've been through, and surely having some support mentally from a mental health professional or a member of the teaching team or something like that has to be a good thing, surely. I hope.
I've got a stutter, and like my stutter was really bad when I was at school, and then someone, Top of the Pops came, like, song came on Top of the Pops, and it was called Stutter Rap, and like, that's all I got at school was Stutter Rap. And I've still got a stutter, but I'm quite proud of my stutter. I'm not really that bothered about it, but I had to go to speech therapy. But that was hard, being mainly at primary school, being called Stutter Rap.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, and if you'd have maybe received that support even earlier at the time, yeah, that was still going to happen to you. There's no way those kids were going to let that get away. They were going to
bomb
that one on you. But
that's the word.
The point is, it's the support you get at the time, or lack of support that you get at the time. And I know all those experiences that I went through would have been easier to deal with and easier to process had I have had the support. But back then, sexual abuse, being fat, getting bullied, it was all just brushed under the carpet. It was like, oh, you'll be all right, don't worry. We've dealt with it, we've put him in detention for a week, or we've done this, and it was like the culprit was dealt with. But your feelings and the kind of aftermath of it and your experience as a victim was never dealt with. It was just like, oh, well, we've dealt with the culprit, so everything's all right now. And that was how things happened, wasn't it? That was it.
So it's a fine balance then of not being too, shall we say, namby-pamby soft.
No, and I don't think
then sort of
will be namby-pamby. So.
No, but sort of, I mean, I'm quite pleased I got brought up in the 80s, 90s, because I can see it for what it is now. And, like, I've got a bit of a nihilistic approach to things now. I'm like, oh, what's the point? We all die at the end.
Yeah.
And, like, sort of sometimes that's not good, because then my mind starts to wonder, and I'm like, is there any point, really, to, like, anything anymore? And that's these last 2 weeks, that's, like, sort of how it's been. I'm like, I'm getting so much of this BLM stuff, I'm getting so much of the trans stuff, and I'm like, do I even need to? I mean, I've thought about quitting my podcast. I've thought about, is it even worth doing anything anymore? Just like, and sometimes I think it's better to be living in like a BGT bubble. And I call it a BGT bubble because it's Britain's Got Talent. And like, the reason I call it is because people just go throughout the week thinking it's fine, sit down in the like bubble and just watch the TV and think, like, sort of switch off, become a robot, then they repeat it again. Yeah. And sometimes I'm thinking, that's a good way to live. But then I'm thinking, well, do I need to fight for things?
Or... That's the thing. And I've had this throughout what I've been doing with vlogging and stuff like that. There have been many, many, many times I've wanted to just not bother with it anymore. What's the point when everyone just thinks I'm a fat piece of shit? And what am I actually fighting for? Why? Who am I fighting for? But then I sit back and think, the thing is, all anyone ever wants in any of these movements is basic human respect. I'm not looking for you to like me. I'm not looking for you to be attracted to me. I don't give a shit what you think of me, but what I would like you to do is leave me alone so I can get on with my life.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, isn't it? When you step out the door as a fat person, or you step out the door as a black person, or you step out the door as a ginger person, anything that's not normal, the normal, whatever.
You're saying gingers aren't normal?
I'm happily partnered with one, so no, we've not. But all you're actually looking for is the chance to get on with your life without judgment.
Yeah.
And wouldn't that be nice? And then I remind myself of that when I do find myself writing these blog posts or making these statements on social media, because I just want to say to people, you know what? I'm a human being. I'm worthy and valid of love. I'm worthy and valid of respect. And I definitely don't need your judgment. So here I am, and I suppose that's why I put myself on that platform, because I wanted to put a human face to the discrimination and say, look, there's a human behind that. Oh, look at that fat cow. There's a human behind it, and she's a mum, and she's a businesswoman, and she's not a drain on the NHS, and all these kind of things that we're kind of. And
do you get that a lot with like sort of people saying you being fat like this, that, and like the other, you're going to like drain the NHS later in life?
I don't get a lot of it personally, but it's there. It's a societal opinion. It's what's been driven into us as a society. Fat people are a drain on the NHS. Fat people are a waste of space. Fat people are smelly and dirty. All these kind of things that have been ingrained into us to think about. And that's why I guess I just wanted to say, look, I'm really nice, and all those other fat birds and blokes like me are really nice as well. And when you form an opinion about someone based on their physical appearance, what you need to realize is that you have to go so much deeper than that. And we have to remember that. How is it still a thing in 2020 that we're forming opinions on people based on their physical appearance? It drives me insane.
Because as you say, it's been ingrained to us from, dot zero, from like TV shows to comedy shows to social media.
For the butt of the joke, they never have a romantic lead. They never, none of that. They never have a good job. They're always the joke. Rebel Wilson's always the joke. As much as people would like to say she's doing something for fat people, she's raising our image, that was still the butt of jokes.
Who's the actress that was in that puppet film, Funtime Murders, and she was in the new Ghostbusters film? McCarthy, is it?
McCarthy, yeah.
I find her really funny and I really like her. She's so jolly.
She's a little bit better, because I have seen films in which there's one where she's a mum and she gets divorced and she goes back to college and she ends up pulling this really fit guy at college and all this kind of thing. So she does explore the many facets of fat person, and I think she portrays fat people better than maybe someone like Rebel Wilson. But there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of, like you say, in the media, in our entertainment, in our modelling, in all this kind of thing, in the representation of fat people, still a lot of work to be done. And I'd like to think that I contribute like a 0.05% towards that in some way.
I think you do more than that. I mean, it's a good idea. And I, maybe 2-3 years ago, I was under this guise of like, people should just live in peace, be happy. But then one of my friends said, you're always going to get a psychopath out there or a sociopath. That's why socialism, communism won't work. Being like, 'cause someone's going to want a bigger part of the pie. And that's in human nature.
Yeah.
And I think that's a depressive thing when, like, I think that's always going to be the case in humanity. And I'm like,
fuck humanity. And space is dominated by middle class white people who look a certain way and act a certain way, and still to this day, the important spaces, the business forum, the entertainment world, the sports world, all this kind of thing are dominated by that one sort of person that we're all supposed to aspire to be. And I've found through what I do, people don't aspire so much anymore. They actually want to relate to people. They want to see someone who looks like them. They want to see someone who talks like them. So regional accents on TV and in films. Because how often is it just one particular slightly southern accent? We don't hear ourselves in the media. We don't see ourselves in the media. And that's why people like me, I guess, do what we do. Because we want to slowly and surely have kids grow up and say, wow, she looks like me and she's great. Or they... from my town and they're doing really well and all that kind of thing. So yeah, I think the internet, again, we say the pros and cons of it, social media and all that, has given people who wouldn't have had a voice in the past, it has given them a platform and given them a voice, and I think that's really important as well.
Do you think, going back to the technology thing, that it's made it easier for people like yourself, bloggers and bands and that? Because I used to be in a punk band when I was 17, and the way we used to do demos, our first demo was done in someone's front room. Our singer, they were all older than me, about 5 years older, 4 years older. They went to Argos to buy tapes. Then they recorded the demo onto the tape, they drew the thing, DIY. Now it's like instant. You put it on YouTube, email it, it's all that. And I do think that takes, maybe it is a bit of jealousy, but maybe it takes a bit of the work out of it and a bit of the pride out of it, because it's so simple now to do it. And I don't think the younger generation that have not been brought up without technology, it's like we did, don't appreciate how hard it was back then.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in my 20s, I always wanted to be a plus-size model, despite the fact that I was always on a diet and all that kind of thing. I actually wanted to do it. And I remember I moved to London and I went to Marks and Spencer's headquarters. They were doing a call-out for models. And I remember I went and I had to be measured and I had to take my photograph and all that kind of thing. And at the time, she said to me, well, you know, you're a little bit out of proportion, your hips are too big, blah, 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 but we could use you as a fit model, which is basically where they just measure you up and they fit the clothes onto you. You don't actually ever appear on a catalogue, them days a catalogue or a poster.
Little Woods, yeah.
Yeah, and I tried and I tried trying to get myself out there, and it was incredibly hard. So, yeah, it has made it much more accessible, much easier for people. And that does mean that now and then, a bit of shit gets through the filter, doesn't it? And maybe someone not as talented or not as kind of hardworking as you gets to the top quicker. And that is unfortunate, but I do love that it has opened up a whole different
definitely
world as well. So again, it's that pros and cons. It's there is going to be crap that comes out of it, but there is going to be something good that comes out of it. It opened a whole world up to me and made it easier for me. So yeah.
So let's talk about the plus size model, because like if I we was back in like say 97 and someone mentioned a plus size model, you'd like have them turn around and go, what? Size model? You want people like Campbell, Cindy like Crawford, Vanessa Kate Paradio, Moss. Kate Moss, people like that. But now you've got an insurgent of plus size models, but people can relate to them saying, well, if she can do it or he can do it, so can I. Yeah. And that gives them that a bit of, so like technology's done that, so it is good and it is bad. But just tell us a bit more about your sort of your path through being a plus size like sort of model.
Yeah, so again, it came through the blog. I didn't even know bloggers could get like free clothes and stuff like that. So I was buying clothes, putting them up, but I was tagging some of the brands on social media. So I was like, oh, I've done a blog about your jeans or... I mean, it happened really quick for me because when I first started, it was quite a niche market. There weren't many plus size bloggers. So I was really lucky in that sense that I got in the very early days of it. And kind of 6 months in, I had Simply B contact me and say, do you want to come down to London for an event? Gok Wan is releasing his newest lingerie range. You can go and meet him and we'll have a nice day out. And I was like, you what?
Oh, wow.
With me, I was like, okay, sure. And so there was me getting on a train and meeting people that I would never have had the chance to meet in little old Grimsby. And it did open up that world. And from there, I met people who wrote for magazines or owned magazines. And then you meet the PR people for the brands and things like that. So you start going to these events, and because of my blog and because of my social media, you get invited to go and model and say, we've got a job for you. You're going to pay you X amount of money. You're going to go down to the studio and do whatever. And yeah, it just kind of went from there, really. So yeah, for me, that blog and social media had completely changed my world.
Like, so how long was you doing your blog before you got taken on, or you got asked to go to London and things started to get big?
That was about 6 months, I think, when I got that first big event in London.
Because
what they started, because before blogs, it would just be press that was invited to these events. So you would get representatives from different magazines and newspapers. But then they realised the reach of blogs. So they started inviting us to the events as well. So you were kind of straight in the throes of the press pack kind of thing. You was in with everyone else. And yeah, so once that happened in that first 6 months, it did really snowball from there for a good few years. I mean, I was going down to London every other week for some kind of event or new release of a clothing range, or come and see the spring summer collection, all that kind of thing. I was even at London Fashion Week and stuff like that. It really did kind of snowball. And then a lot of young upstarts came along who were a lot younger, a lot prettier, and lived in London and things like that. And they got the bite of the cherry then. And that was fine. I was like, you know what? I'm a mum. I'm in my mid-30s. That's fine. I'll still carry on doing my thing. But I did notice the kind of invites and things kind of drip away because I just wasn't in the throes of it in London and things like that. So, yeah. But luckily, the modelling work carried on, and I do still do bits and bobs now and then.
Yeah, do you find that that put you off at all, having that sort of younger generation coming up from London? And do you think some of it was superficial, just to say, oh, look at me, I can do this, where yours was a bit more personal towards you? And
yeah, I mean, I thought
you had a bit more of a cause.
At first it was heartbreaking. I was like, oh god, that's it, it's all over, all my hard work and everything's just been taken away from me by these beautiful long-haired curvy girls who were, I was just like, oh god. And I took a huge hit at the time, incredible, because yeah, I just thought, god, I've worked so hard, but I don't fit into that kind of box. I've got short hair, I dress quite masculine, I'm quite gobby, and I'm not this beautiful, perfect hourglass, big busted, all that kind of thing. I was like, wow, that's it, it's all over, my kind of glory days have gone. But I persevered and got on with it. But yeah, you did kind of question their motivation, yeah, to get into it. Were they getting into it because they just wanted free clothes? Where they're getting into it because they wanted fame? I mean, I never got into it for that. I got into it because I genuinely have always loved fashion. I mean, my nana was a seamstress. She was a dressmaker, and we used to make clothes together and stuff.
That's wicked.
Absolutely loved it. And so for me, it was a complete passion project. It was something from the heart. And like you say, because of how I'd felt before about my body, it was revolutionary to me. It was so uplifting. So, yeah, kind of further down the line, I was like, it made me really sad. And, yeah, it made me jealous and envious as well. And I will fully admit that. But I just kind of, from that day on, I've kept my head down, continue to do what I do, try and be consistent in what I do. And I hope I've got a lovely little loyal following who enjoy what I do and feel empowered by what I do. And if I make one woman feel better about herself, then my job is done. I'm happy with that. And I do get lovely messages to say, since I found you, I've completely changed my wardrobe, I've become more confident, it's lovely, I've gone swimming with my kids, stuff like that.
Yeah,
is why I do it. I'm like, oh, that's amazing, because she said, I wouldn't have had the confidence before, but you've got a body just like mine, and I've seen you in a swimsuit and I don't hate it, so therefore I know I can go and do it now. And that's when it becomes important to me. That's what matters.
Yeah, you've like hit the nail on like the head, because like during this lockdown, I do see bigger people on bikes, running, jogging and walking. And I used to be in the mindset when I was at school, used to take the mic and went, look at that, because I was young and sheepy. But now I'm like, fucking go on, do it. Because while they're doing it, someone else isn't. And it's just helping you so much mentally, physically, and that. And it just gives you that sense of pride.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I want to instill in people. I want to say, look, if I can do it, you can do it. Whether that's dressing in trendy clothes, whether that's going to the beach with your kids, whether that's going to the gym. Because, again, that's a big, massive kind of stumbling block for plus-size people. They're like, well, I don't want to go to the gym because, like, I'll be
everyone's going to be
people be looking at me. And I actively, again, post pictures. I'm like, I'm at the gym today. I'm doing yoga. I love yoga. And, again, if I inspire one person to just live their best life right now, right here, then I have done my job.
No one's bothered about sort of fat people, big people. It's like the gym.
Yeah.
It's because you're self-conscious, and I understand where they're coming from. But that, like, other you might get one or two because you see them at Pure Gym, and like some of the girls are like all done up, like they're going on a night out, and it's like I'm sweating like a big fat potato, and you're really like you're on a night out. But
the thing is, I try
just
and
don't notice them.
People. Yeah, the thing I try and get across to people is even if people are bothered by you being at the gym, fuck them. Basically, what does it matter? The world. If you go out in a sleeveless top, cause that's, again, it's the thing. Oh, I don't want to show my arms. I don't want to show this. I don't want to do it. You know what? If you go out, and the world will not come to an end. The world will keep turning, if regardless of whether you go to the gym or don't go to the gym, regardless of whether you wear a swimming costume or wear a full burqa, is the world will not stop turning. So just live your best life right now, right here. You owe yourself that.
So if people wanted to get into blogging and doing what you're doing, have you got any tips for them? On how to get started?
Get a blog.
How would people go about getting a blog? Do you have to pay? Because like my podcast costs me about £10 a month for the like hosting, and they send it out like sort of everywhere. So do you use something like WordPress that's free,
So years ago I started on Blog Loving, and Blogger. I started because it was just easy for me. It's the one that's clicked with me, and I will always say that to people: find something that works for you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong, with my kind of professional head on, like WordPress is great for SEO and blah 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 and all this kind of thing, but back then Blogger was just like click and drop, and I could do it and I could figure it out, and it worked for me, and I used it for many, many years. And then getting into the kind of industry separately, I do kind of website work and SEO and all that kind of thing. I know WordPress is a lot better to do your SEO and stuff like that, but initially just find something that works for you, and it doesn't have to cost you a penny. You can go on a free site. You might have WordPress blocked in the middle, or Blogger or whatever. You might not have your own URL, but if you kind of just want to do blogging for your own personal kind of build your confidence up, or just have a little corner of the internet where you can have a voice, then by all means just go on one of the free sites and get going.
Is WordPress free then?
WordPress.com is, but I don't think WordPress.org is. I don't know, but don't quote me on that.
What happens if people are a bit concerned about the spelling and the sort of punctuation and things like that?
Again, don't worry about it. If people are good, again, it's a whole judgmental thing, isn't it? I mean, I'm terrible. I've got a degree in professional writing, so I'm like, oh, I see a mistake there, I see a mistake. But I would never go up to someone and go, oh, God, your blog's rubbish because you don't put commas in it. If you want to do it and you enjoy it, that's the most important thing. If you haven't put a comma in it, or you've spelt something wrong, I won't worry too much about it. There's spell check and stuff on the internet, isn't it? So just try it. If you can get into it, go for it, I say. You'll develop and... I mean, I didn't do it right from the beginning by any stretch of the imagination. My early blogs were absolute turd. It's like, but I did it, and I carried on, and I persevered. And that's the best thing you do with most things in life, isn't it? Just crack at it and keep persevering, and you'll get there in the end.
So if people wanted to find out more about you, where can they find you? I'd like know you're on Instagram, and you've got all your links on there, and I will post everything in the description. But if you want to tell everyone...
Right across social media, you'll find me as Becky Barnes Blog. So that's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. And then if you want to go to my blog, it's just beckybarnes.co.uk.
Excellent stuff. Well, thank you for coming on. Before we go, I have to mention the podcast is sponsored by two companies. The first one is runesilk.com, which is a beard care company. They do some awesome oils and some really nice beard butter, awesome sunglasses and beard combs and that. And the other one is tenga.co.uk, which is a Japanese sex toy company.
Nice.
So, and
they got Tenga.
Yeah, you get 15% off on checkout on your first purchase. So the code to put in is Tin Biscuit, capital T, capital B, and you'll get 15% off.
Nice.
But as for the sex toys, I'm not so sure. I like haven't used any. Sort of did send me one out, but I haven't got around to using it yet. The like oils are really nice. The oils, if they're like, you've got a beard, I don't want to bore you, but if sometimes you get the oil on and you put it in your beard and it's still on you, and it takes ages to wash off, this stuff isn't. You just sort of rub it into your skin and it's gone, and it's really nice, makes your beard look good. Well, you put it in your hair as well. But like, so thank you for taking the time for coming on, and that, please, for everyone, please like, share, subscribe, and go from there.
Yeah, fab. Thanks for having me.
Right, thank you very much for coming on. See you later. Ta-da. Bye-bye. Bye. The Tea Biscuits Podcast.